Yo, welcome back everybody to another episode of That's AK Podcast. Welcome back. So, as I already said, if you haven't, so basically, this is my college football section. But I'm also going to talk a little Jets too. So, I want to talk about Jimbo Fisher and the big time, or this big time news coming out of College Station. Huge college football topic. I figured I'd talk about it on a separate episode. I wanted to give it its own episode. So I'm going to talk for the majority of time about Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M, what they're going to do, and so forth. How does this look and throughout the landscape of college football? Because it will have some ripple effects. Now, without further ado, first and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kidd of the Isaiah Kidd Podcast. I have already, by the time you guys will hear this, or if you're listening to this, I will have already dropped this week's episode of me breaking down week 10. So go check that out. If you, I would encourage you guys to go check it out so you can keep up and so forth with our weekly NFL check-ins. But I have, I broke down some of the marquee matchups in week 10. So you can go check that out. It's about an hour long. Also, I did my top 10 teams list. So yeah, good out of view. But like I said, we're here for college football. We're going to talk about Jimbo Fisher. I'm going to lay out a possible hypothetical college football playoff scenario since we're getting closer and closer to that time. And a little bit of Jets. A little tiny bit. So Jimbo Fisher gets fired at Texas A&M. They get rid of him, and it kind of seems like he won the Powerball, right? Like, seems like he just won the Powerball. And if you are the type that you don't really care about these numbers, and you're like, there's people out there starving, I don't want to be that guy. But if you are that type where you don't want to hear about a fired football coach getting a lot of money to not even coach football, cover your ears, or like maybe just skip forward like 15-30 seconds, because these numbers that you're about to hear is staggering. I think now the best job in America, unequivocally, I don't think it's up for debate, the best job in America is being a fired football coach. I mean, because the numbers are insane. So dating back all the way to 2017, Texas A&M, they hire Jimbo Fisher. They give him the money. They gave him a large 10-year contract. 2021, you know what? They said, we'll double it, $95 million. So they fire him, obviously, this year. They fired him after. They fired him on Sunday, right after their big time win versus Mississippi State, 51-10, they fired him on that next day. So that means this was already a move that was going to happen. They've been planning for this. They've just been prepping and planning for this move. So it's a $77.5 million buyout. Yes, $77 million. That is what Jimbo Fisher is owed. Now, how is Texas A&M, obviously they're not going to pay the whole $77 million all at once. So I'm going to give you the breakdown on how they're going to be paying Jimbo Fisher. He is owed $19 million over the next 60 days. So in the next 2 months, Texas A&M will be giving Jimbo Fisher damn near $20 million. Is that not like the life? Fired football coach, next 60 days, you get $19 million? Goodness gracious. Okay, past that, his annual pay through 2031 will be $7 million a year. So for the next, so it's 2023, over the next 8 years, because it was a 10-year contract. In 2021, they said they doubled it up. They read them up. So in 2031, or through all the way up to 2031, they'd be annually paying him $7 million. a year. Crazy contract. Crazy contract. Crazy contract right there. I mean, the numbers are staggering. I don't want to talk about the money because a lot of people are going to talk about the money and it is going to, and it's hard not to, but let's get to the actual X's and O's and Jimmy and Joe's part of this. And it's the field. And with Jimbo Fisher, he was in year six. It was not going to get better. Like it was not going to get better. And I've been very confused with the Texas A&M thing because I'm like, Jimbo, Texas A&M, they recruit at a high level. Now they recruit at a very, very high level. Texas A&M, usually their recruiting class is usually a top five recruiting class. So they recruit at a really dominant level. Better than what some of you guys may think or proceed like, but they recruit at a crazy good level. But if you were, and I'm pretty sure more like 98% of Texas A&M fans are probably happy that like they're moving off of Jimbo, because it's like you can't keep reading the same book and expect like a different ending or something. Or different, like that's the whole definition of insanity. Doing the same thing, expecting a different result. Like that's you can't do that. And that's what Jimbo, like, I get it. They have a lot of close losses. So many close losses. That's the thing at Jimbo. Like that's what it felt like with Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. Reading the same book, expecting a different ending. But no, it's the same ending. And I know people like, man, they got so many close losses. They were this close to, you know, beating them. And people bring up, you know, if they didn't have this injury, if they didn't have this injury, if they just won the turnover margin in this game, that's all well and good for a season. We're talking about a half a dozen years. We're talking about 6 years. We're talking about 6 years of repetitiveness, you know, 6 years of repetitiveness, and it just wasn't good enough. And annually, or I should say, this Texas A&M program is a perennial 8-win program. Since I've been alive, they have been a 8-win program. That is what Texas A&M is. Now, for people like, you could have gave them one more year. There was no, like, one more year for what? Okay, you give him one more year. What rabbit was Jimbo going to pull out of the hat? What rabbit was he going to pull out of the hat that he didn't pull out of the hat, out of his hat for the first 6 years? What, like, if he didn't have the answer in 6 years, what makes you think he's going to have the answer in year seven, year eight, year nine? Like, it was never, there with the upside of this thing, slim to none. Like, there was no upside. Now, beware, because here's why I say what I say. And people may not agree with it. And for the people that don't agree with it, and I'm not saying I can't be wrong or you gotta agree with me. No, I actually encourage people, anybody that listens, I encourage people to, like, disagree and have some pushback and provide another perspective. But what I'm about to say is more so fact, and it can't be really debated, or like they're variables that just can't be debated, right? So, and I know, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I know what I'm about to say is about to get, you know, some people like, Texas A&M is a premier job. I say it again. Texas A&M is an elite job in the country. It's an elite job. It is on the damn near the same caliber of Ohio State, of Georgia, Alabama. It is that good of a job. It is not some tier two or tier three kind of job. And we need to, I feel like with college football and with college football fans, they have a hard time separating prestigiousness of a job and having certain resources and separating like the trophy case. I get it. Texas A&M, they don't have the trophies. They don't have the conference titles. They don't have the impeccable record like a Bama, like a Georgia, like an Ohio State to really put themselves amongst that class. But it's not even about that. It's about the resources. Anything that you need in college football as a program to succeed in terms of externally, Texas A&M has it. All of the external resources and things that you need to compete at the highest level of college football, Texas A&M has it, and they have the same amount, or if not more, than some of those other programs that win, like a Alabama, like a Ohio. They might have more. So, and it's an elite job. So you got to ask yourself, what is Texas A&M? Well, they have a passionate fan base. They got, obviously, they have money. They got the nice facilities. And they have a competent conference that actually cares. And then also, they have a local recruiting base. So it is a elite job. We're talking resources, being able to have talent acquisition. They have figured it out. They recruit really well. If Texas A&M get the right guy, they can quickly turn around and win immediately. That is how good the Texas A&M job is. And I know a lot of people like, well, they don't win conference titles or they play in the same conference as Bama and Georgia. They're not as good as okay. They literally have everything to compete for a national championship. They have everything there to not only compete for a national championship, but to win national championships. Like they do. like I said, there is no external factors that Texas A&M doesn't have. There's no external factors. Now, in Texas A&M case, there is some internal issues. But it is as good as a job as it gets. And we got to be able to distinguish a trophy case for the caliber of the job. We got to be able to, you know, we got to separate the two at times. They don't lack the critical factors to be an elite program. But the thing that has killed Texas A&M and the reason why since my lifetime, essentially, they have been a perennial 8-9 win team. It's the mere fact that they have made some horrible decisions in terms of hiring the right guy in charge. They have made the wrong decision. Jimbo Fisher, I mean, the hire in hindsight, 2020 hindsight, right? In hindsight, it was a bad hire because we all know how it ends. But in 2016, I mean, that looked like a pretty good hire. Jimbo Fisher, Florida State, won a national championship. Like, that looked like a pretty good hire in 2016. It did. It really did. Even Kevin Sumlin, that looked like a pretty good hire. Sumlin had a really good year. He started off really well. But then It took a turn. And, you know, like I said, a lot of people don't want to really talk about it because we look at that Texas A&M and we like, they're in the state of Texas, right? You got to look at what region they're in. They're in the state of Texas. So obviously the Longhorns, huge fan base. But the Longhorns, Texas, they have some of the same, Texas A&M has the same resources and the same type of ability as a Texas, but they don't have the same prestige. They don't have the same tradition, right? Oklahoma is also in that Texas region. They're also in Texas A&M region, right? And Oklahoma doesn't have all of the resources, but they have this rich tradition, and they have been they've been one of the more winningest programs of my lifetime. Same thing with LSU. LSU in that same region. LSU, every coach since 2000, every coach that have coached at LSU, they've won a national championship. Nick Saban, Les Miles, Ed Orgeron. We'll see if Brian Kelly can keep up the trend. But literally, every coach that has stepped foot at LSU, all of them haven't ended well, but every coach, they've been able to squeak out a national championship. So do those programs that I just named, do they have a better foothold on college football and how we view things? Sure. If you want to say that, sure. But A&M, I assure you guys, A&M, they have the same type of ability in terms of resources and, you know, being able to accumulate talent, whether that's through the portal, whether that's through recruiting, they can do it. You know what program used to be Texas A&M? And we don't even think about it. But I remember it because I grew up watching them struggle and couldn't get over them. I grew up watching them. But you know what program used to be Texas A&M? Same. They got money. They got a passionate fan base. They're able to recruit at a high level, right? They're in a great recruiting area. They had all the external external resources and advantages to be really dominant in college football. You know what program that used to be? That used to be Georgia. And this is what I mean. Texas A&M, they haven't hired the right guy. They just haven't hired the right guy in years. They've made mistakes in terms of deciding who should be the head coach. But Georgia literally used to be Texas A&M. A perennial 9-10 win team, but talent, they always had the talent. They always had top recruiting classes, but just couldn't get over the hump. Just couldn't beat Alabama. Just couldn't beat Florida. Just couldn't beat LSU. Couldn't win national championships. And then you look up, you know, they hire this fat guy, no disrespect, but they hire this guy named Kirby Smart, and then he takes over, and then they win a national championship. Then they win another national championship. Now they're in play for a third straight national championship. So literally, and I remember the Aaron Murray days. I remember the Matthew Stafford days. I remember the days with Georgia, great defense, great recruiting classes. Couldn't get over the hump. I remember those days. I remember those days where they couldn't beat the Auburns. They just lose to Alabama. They couldn't get over that hump and win the SEC. I remember those days at Georgia. And they had everything you possibly needed to win national championships. All it takes is hiring the right guy. You get the right staff. You get the right staff, the perfect staff in A&M. They'll be competing at the same type of level as the Georgias and the Bama. I kid you not, because they have the talent. They have the dudes. That's not a problem. They just haven't had the right leader. Since 1996, essentially, A&M has been a 8-win program. There's been two seasons where they have won 10 games or more. 1998 was one year they won the Big 12 versus Kansas State. And then, obviously, as I already alluded to, Kevin Sumlin, that was Johnny Manziel's first year. And that was actually Texas A&M's first year in the SEC. Their first year in the SEC, they won 11 games. They won 11 games. So I feel like constantly the expectation for Texas A&M has been kind of like outsides. Like they've had some outsized expectations. But with the right coach, that can absolutely change. That can absolutely change. With the right coach, with the right coaching staff, that can absolutely change with the amount of things at their disposal. They have a lot of critical external resources and advantages and key things, key factors that you need to win national championships and compete at a high level that a lot of programs that you guys think are just so much better, they're not. Texas A&M has just as much, if not more, resources and more at their disposal. Trust me, facts over feelings. That's facts. So, Jimbo got fired. Hopefully, you know, Texas A&M make the right decision, in drafting, in hiring a coach. But yeah, it's a really good program. They'll be fine if they hire the right guy. Okay, so before I move on and talk about the Jets a little bit, this, like I said, mind you, this episode won't be long. It was more so I wanted to talk about Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M. But, okay. And I saw this on Twitter from Joel Klatt. Joel Klatt, who I like, I think he's probably, to me, I think he's probably the best college football analyst that we have. Right now, Klatt has been really, really good. I like some of his content and so forth. And he's a really good broadcaster with Gus Johnson. Now, he put out this hypothetical college football scenario, and I thought it was interesting. So obviously, there's four spots, and he threw out the scenario of a 13-0 Big Ten champ. That would presumably be Ohio State or Michigan, and then 13-0 FSU, who presumably they would have won the ACC championship if they're 13-0. So we got a Big Ten champ and an ACC champ, and he said there's two spots for the following: 12-1 Oregon, let's say they're a champ; 12-1 Texas, they're a Big 12 champ; 12-1 Bama, they're SEC champ. Georgia is 12-1. Washington is 12-1. They played in their conference championships, but they lost them. Now, also, the loser of the Ohio State-Michigan game, they'll also be 11-1. But with those other, five teams, I don't know. Whoever the loser of that Michigan-Ohio State team, they might be on the outside looking in. Because I don't know if there's enough, would there be much consideration? I mean, granted, I know both the Wolverines and the Buckeyes, they have some of the best wins in the country. But that's kind of like, you can't lose that game. If you're Ohio, if you're either team really can't lose that game. That's a big game. Now, obviously, Texas has a win against Bama. Now, outside of that win versus Bama, Texas, not really impressive. Not an impressive, strength of schedule, right? Not too impressive outside of the Bama win. And their resume is okay. But I do think they would probably get the nod. The committee, Texas, huge brand. I think Texas they legitimately can win a national championship this year. So I would kind of like ink them in because Bama, granted, that's their only big time win, but it's against the SEC champ. So in this scenario, so I would that Bama win carries a lot of weight. So that would leave really Oregon in Bama. Because if you're going to put, if you're going to, if, because I'm giving a nod to Texas. If I'm giving the nod to Texas, how, what's my argument for Georgia getting in that last spot? Because Bama would have beaten Georgia if I put in Georgia instead of Oregon or Bama. It's like, I don't really have a real argument for putting Georgia or giving Georgia that last spot if I'm giving that third spot to Texas. Because Texas beat Bama, Bama beat Georgia. You get what I'm saying? Okay. And then Washington. The same thing kind of exists. Now, the thing with Washington and Oregon, Washington already beat Oregon. If Oregon was the Pac-12 champ, that means they would have beaten probably Washington. And I'm trying to think. After Washington's victory over Oregon, who's look more impressive, Washington or Oregon? Up until this point, I feel like Oregon has been the more impressive team. And overall, I think they're the more, I think they're the most, I think they're the more complete team. I think Oregon is the most complete team. And out of any Pac-12 team, I think they are most equipped to win the national championship because of their play on the offensive and defensive line. And mainly on the defensive line, because I think there's a couple guys that Oregon have defensively that Washington would love to have. But Washington just does not have that personnel. And ultimately, eye test-wise, I feel like Oregon has looked better than Washington since Washington has beaten them. And then obviously Oregon would have the split because they would have beaten Washington over, they've over the, for the Pac-12 championship. So that leaves Bama and Oregon. Me personally, I would go with Oregon. I would go with Oregon. Now, in that type of scenario, I could easily see the committee roll with Alabama. Alabama has looked really impressive. They have played some really high-powered offenses. They're only giving up 19.5 points a game. Jalen Milroe, his play with his arm has improved throughout the season. This Alabama offense and this team in general has come a long way. But I feel like Oregon, if Oregon and Alabama were to play, I feel like Oregon would win. I feel like Oregon would win. I feel like they're the more, I think they're the more complete team and they have more ways to beat you than Alabama does. So that was just a little quick, like, you know, quick little what if this situation, what if, you know, quick playoffs scenario, college football scenario. We're going to obviously have more college football playoff talk as the season progresses. The last thing that I want to talk about before I let you guys go in this brief episode, and it's back to the NFL. Sorry, college football fans. But I see the question, who's to blame for the Jets' offensive struggles? And Zach Wilson, we kind of know, like, he's just not it, right? Just not it. But the thing that's more surprising to me, or that, like, I'm just confused by, is the mere fact that the Jets' pride and ego has just made this situation worse. And let me explain. The Jets, whether it's their coach in Robert Saleh, whether it's their front office, they have too much pride and ego to admit that they whiffed on Zach Wilson with that number two pick. I just don't understand why they just can't acknowledge, like, hey, we made a mistake, let's pivot. Time and time again throughout the NFL, especially with quarterbacks, it's okay. It is so goddamn hard. I feel like every day I try to come up with a new way or like a new measurable to figure out if this guy or if this guy is a franchise quarterback and if this guy, like, it is hard. It is hard. So the mere fact that they just can't admit that they whiffed is it's kind of crazy to me. And honestly, thinking, and I started thinking, but I'm like, usually when you whiff on picks, especially that high, obviously there's a lot of vested interest. But in this case, it's easier. You know why it's easier? You know why I feel like it should be easier for the Jets management and coaching staff? It should be easier for them to admit that they whiffed, because guess what? It doesn't matter who they would have took. It doesn't matter who they would have took. Usually you don't want to whiff, or you're just scared to admit that you are wrong, especially when it comes to these quarterbacks, because there's usually other quarterbacks that turned out to be pretty good. You know, like, there's usually other guys, like the Bears. They're probably, man, the Bears are haunting themselves because they moved up and drafted Mitchell Trubisky at 2, where they could have had like a Deshaun Watson. They could have had a, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes, right? Like, but with this Jets and Zach Wilson situation, no matter who you would have picked, it would have worked out. Like, no matter who they drafted, and no matter who they drafted at 2, it would have been a whiff. Trey Lance isn't accurate. He really can't. He really hasn't even seen the field much since he's been drafted. Justin Fields, I mean, there's some hope. There's a glimmer of hope for him, but I don't see it. Like, I don't see franchise quarterback on Justin Fields. I just don't see it. And Mac Jones was never going to be drafted that high. But if, hey, let's just say the Jets was on something, they drafted him that high, he clearly wouldn't have worked. So if there was ever a time to admit that you missed on a quarterback, it's this particular draft class. It is this particular year. It's okay, because it turned out all 4 of your options, none of them were the right choice, essentially. Like, none of them were probably going to be the right choice. So it should be so much easier to just take a deep breath. We whiffed. We made a mistake. It should be so much easier because, it should be so much easier because all 4 of your options that you had on the table, turns out they couldn't play. Like, they either couldn't play, not accurate enough. Justin Fields just doesn't have certain instincts. Mac Jones just not good enough. Like, it is okay. It is okay. And then the Jets, I mean, granted, the Aaron Rodgers thing was unfortunate. The injury was unfortunate. But they never even thought about a contingency plan. What if this 40-year-old quarterback or nearing 40-year-old quarterback that we're acquiring, what if he gets hurt? Maybe we should have a solid backup. I guess they're just going to pretend like their defense can carry them to the playoffs. Oh, wait. We saw that story last year. We saw how that worked out last year. That's why you went and frantically got Aaron Rodgers. I mean, and like, there were so many quarterbacks on the market. I mean, the Rams said, fuck it. Let's just go out and get Carson Wentz. I mean, like, Vikings traded a 5th for Josh Dobbs. Like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? What are we doing here? So I just kind of find that funny about the Jets. They can't seem to admit that they made the wrong mistake. And I get it if, like, you know, you whiffed at 2 and the Bears drafted Justin Fields and it looks like Justin Fields is going to be a Hall of Famer. Okay. Yeah, I get you don't want to admit it. Cool. There's some vested interest. But if there was any time to admit that you got a draft pick wrong, it's probably this one. It's probably this time. It's probably this draft class, because looking at the quarterbacks, none of them probably would have worked. But I rest my case. I hope you guys enjoyed. This is a quick little brief episode. Always remember, 2 choices, 1 decision. I catch you guys later this week. Peace, deuces. I'm out.